Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th hour of Christ Church, Sabbatarian Congregation, now it's at the 12th hour, and the Elgin Associates. Today is July the 29th, 2025, or it is a sixth day of Av, 2029. We will start the service with a one-time greetings number 8 by the Vicky Hardeth entitled Laodicean or the Vision, which? And so it says that the text of that verse by the Vicky Hardeth on the September the 28, 1946, Mount Carmel Center, Waco, Texas. Okay, it says, H.G. Hardeth is telling his congregation here on September 28, 1946, it said, this afternoon, I am, Brother Vicky Hardeth, to answer the question, how do I know that I am not a Laodicean, that I am not a true Davidian? So now he's addressing his Davidian people. Now he's not addressing the Adam. He's addressing the Davidian congregation. Okay. In order intelligently for the discussion of this question, we must first have a mental picture of what the Laodiceans are like and what the Davidians must be like. I shall read the Revelation 3:14-18. And unto the angel, singular, and for the the Son of Yahweh is addressing one singular prophet here on earth that has the title also as a faulty angel, because he's a man that has inspiration. But he's faulty because he won't always interpret prophecy correctly and other parts of the Bible, because he doesn't have all the inspiration that takes to do that. So Yahshua is addressing this angel, the prophet in charge of the candlestick of the Seventh-day Adventist Laodicean Church. Notice I said Laodicean, not a singular word. It's not addressing the laity. It's addressing the Laodicean Church of Seventh-day Adventist. Of the Laodicean, he said, and unto the angel, and I'll bring it up to date when this prophecy made its fulfillment in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, with the Brother Johnson as this faulty angel in charge of the candlestick, the seventh candlestick of the S.J. Laodicean Church. And unto the angel of the S.J. Laodicean Church, of which these things as I write, saith the Amen. For the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of the Father Yahweh. Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, is telling this angel, Brother Stephen Johnson, Kermit, Texas, 2002, starting at the Passover, I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would that thou wert cold or hot, so then because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I would spew thee out of my mouth. Because thou sayest I am rich and increased with goods, and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable, and poor and blind, and naked. I counsel thee to buy of me gold tried in fire, that thou mayest be rich, and white raiment, that thou mayest be clothed, and that the shame of thy nakedness do not appear, and anoint thine eyes with the eye salve, that thou mayest see. Now in 2002, it's kind of Texas, Brother Johnson prophesied earlier in 2001 that we would have Yeshua in person, would come to see us in person at the Passover of 2002. So we heartedly look forward to that day, because we're going to see Yeshua in person for the first time here on earth in these last days. And we believe that, and we look for that. What is wrong with the angel, Brother Sidney Johnson, of the latest hymn? Now, Richie Hollis, he got this right. Of the Laodicea singular. He is lukewarm. He is neither cold nor hot. Brother Yeshua recommends that he be either cold or hot. Comfortably, he in search of something better rather than stay lukewarm, well contented with his spiritual attainment, supposedly rich and increased with the good, with the truth. I would put the word present truth, not knowing that he is spiritually poor, blind, and naked. He is born a bit by the all-knowing one, and asked to repent. If the Yahshua's own warning failed to change his mind, then the only thing left for the Yahshua to do is to spew him out of his mouth. Now let's do a little review of what I just read. In the first place, we have a better word for the word recommend. It says, the Yahshua recommend. No. Yahshua, if you go read that Revelation 3:14-18 again, he didn't recommend anything to the angel. He says, I counsel thee, and he said, Yahshua just made a plain point comment to the angel. He says, I would that you were cold or hot, but because you are neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Now, it didn't say that Yahshua recommended to him one or two things that he's not worth to do. No, he didn't do that at all. He just said, I know. I would that you were cold or hot, because you're not a one. So he told the lukewarm angel of the candlesticks, he told him, he said, you're not a cold or hot. You think you're all right, being lukewarm like you are. You're not concerned at all about either way, but I'm telling you, you're in trouble. And I would that you were cold or hot. I would much like to see you cold or hot, because I could do something with you then, one way or the other. But like you are, I can't do that with you. So I counsel you about it, Joel's right about. He shouldn't say, I recommend to you that maybe you ought to try this or that. See, so I'm talking about the prophet, each house that's writing this. So often he dropped his own words in the place of the Bible's words and placed them in there, which give a different meaning unto it altogether. But people that don't understand correct English, they will not recognize this when they read it. It takes a prophet with inspiration to recognize these kind of blunders. And that's what I have. I have inspiration to correct and punctuate and recognize all these things. All right, let's go on down now and continue it. By their words, I am rich and increased with the good. Is with the angel, the SGA Laodicea, Laodicean church, keeping it singular, is saying that he has the good understanding of the Bible and has the testimony for the church, and that these make him rich, and that in the addition unto these, he has either the SGA denominational publication, his increase, he thus declares himself that he has the whole truth to carry him right on through the pearly gates, that he needs nothing more. Well, Nicodemus didn't think he had it all, and he went to see Yahshua by night. Yahshua told him what he needed, and he inquired how would he get it, and Yahshua told him how to get it, and he took it. Okay. So Nicodemus realized he didn't have all what it took to get to the pearly gate, or he wouldn't have come to see Yahshua. For the Yahshua counsel is, however, that he buy of him gold tried, that is tried in the fire, so that he may be rich, unveiled the fact that the Laodicean, now when you say, when you put an S on Laodicea, you're putting a plural there, and now you're changing the meaning of Laodicea being singular, meaning the Adventist Church has that title, to the laity, the living members in our midst. We're calling all of them that sits down there with you that has their names on the membership through the Seventh Adventists, we're calling them all Laodicea. But the Bible don't call them all Laodicea. Those members that are signing the crown against all the abominations and practicing the Laodicean church, they are not Laodicean, but they're members of the Laodicean church. So who are they? They're watchmen on the walls of Zion. They were appointed as watchmen. Riches are not a pure gold, and that they're so-called, let's read that again, that he buy of himself, that the faulty angel of the candlestick, he turned out to be a false prophet now, that he buy of him a gold that is tried in the fire, so that he may be rich, and there is a fact that the letter of sin, riches are not pure gold. And that their so-called increase is not an increase of the truth. The worthless, uninspired interpretation, not tried in the fire. For the angel of the Laodicea is naked too, for he has not the wedding garment on, and he has not the righteousness of the Yahshua. Now, that's a whole other subject. If you want to take a lot of time, we switch to another subject and study what constitutes the righteousness of the Yahshua. And we may very well do that in our next study. And his being naked, not having on any clothes, denotes that he has no righteousness save his own, the righteousness with which he was born, his fair skin. Moreover, he is spiritually blind, and that for his ailment, Yahshua's eyesight is the only remedy if he would take the Yahshua's counsel and apply the salve unto his ailing eyes, he could then see what is represented by the salve. Question mark. First, let us see what makes a man spiritual, a spiritually blind. For the only one, that the only one who knows even the number of the hairs on our head points out that if the light that is in thee is darkness, how great is that darkness? Matthew 6:23. If the negligence of the making proper use of the spiritual light makes the offender blind, then something having power for the arousing in him zeal for the discovering of his true condition is his only remedy. Only such an eyesight can possibly open his eyes. Let me concretely illustrate. Individuals often write to the office saying, I heard so much against the shepherd God, and what I heard made me unmercifully prejudiced. But I happened to get a hold of one of your little tracks, and for the courtesy's sake, I thought I'd see what it is about. But as I read a few pages of it, and as my eyes began to open, I read the whole tract. I am now anxious to read the rest of your book. Will you please send me whatever reading matter you can? Another such providential incident came to our attention from the faraway China. I picked up half of your booklet, tract number 13, on the street, and my wife, a few days later, picked up the other half beside the curb of the same drive. I pieced them together and got your address. I am deeply interested in all it contains, and I'm anxiously waiting to hear from you. Could you tell me everything that will help me find my joy. These truth-searching brethren obviously represent those who can be pried out of the level of sinism. Their experiences well illustrate that the shaft represents the inspiration's timely truth. Now let me tell you of another class of the individuals from whom I often hear. Listen to what they say. Please keep me, your rod, to yourself. Or keep your rod to yourself. Take my name from your mailing list. I am not in the least interested in what you are doing. Your bookish go into the fire just as soon as they come. I never read them, and I never will. No, not a line. I am satisfied. This is how I put the word lukewarm here. With my religion, I belong to the true remnant, the church, and I expect to go with it. How dare you try to deceive me? Another says, please do not send me any more of your literature, as I am satisfied with my own views. Let's continue our study on page 20. You see, for this kind of the talk is typically layered of sin. For it perfectly expresses their lukewarmness, for the Asura is against their attitude. Is there anything which is more completely and more quickly sever one's communication line with the Yahweh forever than an attitude of having all the truth and having the need of no more? For if the language and the letters from which I have just read it to you does not say, I am rich and in need of nothing more, then what could say it? For this group of the latest since Seventh-day Adventists, for never, never have their eyes open, for never be anything but wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. They can never be reached by the heaven, not even by the Yahshua himself. If they thus continue, then the only thing that the Yahshua can do is excuse them out of his mouth, never again to mention their name at the throne of the grace. Anything new from the Bible that is brought out by anyone but themselves, even though purported to be through the inspiration, they hastily brand deception, they are already in a gross self-deception. They read the Bible with the hope of finding proof for to disagree with everyone but themselves. Let me illustrate. I may be on the way into a bank with $1 million, and I may seriously believe that I am a millionaire, but suppose the banker tells me your money is counterfeit, and suppose I have no other, then how rich would I be? I would be as rich as the angel of the other side. The single preacher in charge of the candlestick of the Seventh-day Adventist Church of the other side. Just such an eye-opening experience is what the letter sends me, unless something like it happens unto them, they will forever think that they are rich and in need of the nothing more. Some say, though, not long hence, the heavenly watcher himself will demonstrate unto them face to face that their gold is not tried in the fire. Then their eyes will be open, but not soon enough to do them any good. What they now see at a distance appears to them for sure to be the sea of glass. But when they get to the end of the way and take a close look, they will an indescribable grief, and with a quivering voice cry, "Mirage, mirage, 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 not the sea of glass." Then will they be anxious to know the truth and will pay anything to get it, but it will be too late, and they will to change the figure, get to the door only to hear the voice from within say, "I know you not." Matthew 25:12. By a person's facial characteristics, we are able to identify his race, and similarly, we can judge. For my wrist is an itching arm. I got bit. By a person's facial characteristics, we are able to identify his race, and similarly, we can judge one's profession by the type of clothes he wears. If a person wears fine clothes and is not decked with everything he can put on, we judge him to be a businessman. If he wears lower grade clothes and has on his body every trinket he can pin on, then we judge him to be a cheap sport. If he is clothed in overalls, we judge him to be a laborer or a farmer. If he is dressed otherwise, we judge him to be a white collar worker. But if he wears no clothes, and no one but the Yahweh can tell what he is, such is a letter of sin. Well, that's not the best description you could give for a letter of sin. But that's okay. Now, if a white garment represents the Yahshua's righteousness, then if one has on no garment at all, and is naked, then he is naked. Whose righteousness would he have? Self-righteousness. No, it wouldn't be self-righteousness. It would be no righteousness at all. Only the skin in which he was born, or the layer of sins. Nancy Hollis put an S on layer of sin to make it more than two, but there's only one layer of sin in the Adventist church, and that's at a time. That's the preacher, the one with inspiration with the title of a prophet. That's the only layer of sin that you have in the Adventist church. It represents just that. But they know it not. In all respect, I realize it's a sin much, but it is not sin too much, because it is Yahshua who says it. For he invites the lady to sin to buy of him gold, tried in the fire, as a kind that it is tried in the fire, so that they might be truly rich in the spiritual goods. before he invites them to put on their wedding raiment. And the Bible says garment, so I'm going to change that raiment back to garment. So that they be not cast into the outer darkness, there to weep and to gnash their teeth. If they do not accept his invitation now, just now, their nakedness will be exposed, and they thus point to shame. If you do the opposite of what the living sins do, then you cannot still be a living sin. And it is just as easy to know whether you are a Davidian or not. To find out if you are a Davidian, you must first know what a Davidian is. Well, briefly stated, a Davidian is recognized by his garment, by the source from which he gets it, and by what he gives in exchange for it. For the prophet Zechariah explained, Zechariah 3:1-4, and he showed me Joshua, the high priest, standing before the angel of the Yahweh, and Satan standing at his right hand to resist him. And Yahweh said unto the Satan, for the Yahweh rebuked thee, O Satan, even the Yahweh that has chosen Yahushua rebuked thee. Is not this a brand cooked out of the fire? Now the Joshua, son of Josedek, was clothed with the filthy garments, and he stood before the angel. And he answered and spake unto those that stood before him, saying, take away the filthy garments from him. And unto him he said, behold, I have caused thine iniquity to pass from thee, and I will clothe thee with a change of raiment. Now here's a language that is used also describing an angel of letters here. For Yahshua said to that angel, because you are lukewarm and other cold in the heart, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Well, here's that same language again, for Joshua the son of Joseph, and I will clothe thee with the change of the raiment. Once you have had your iniquity passed from you, for the first one to be given the garment is Joshua the son of Joseph, the high priest, as the highest official in the congregation, translated into the highest official in the general conference of the Seventh-day Adventists today. If he has not the garment, then no one else has it either. Well, the president of the general conference of the Seventh-day Adventists, he's not even an Adventist or of the house of Judah, so there's no way that he could have the garment. First, you've got to be at the house of Israel. You've got to be an Adventist, you've got to be a Jew, in other words. Or a Hebrew Israelite. The General Conference of Jesuit Catholics, they're not even Israelites of the Seventh-day Adventists. If he has not the garment, then no one else has it either. So the only one that can possibly have the garment is the angel of the candlestick. That would be the prophet with the sanctuary system restored and in operation in the house of Israel. And that happened to be the only house of Israel that had that under the Adventist movement was Gilead Center. From 1970 to 2003, that the brother Johnson as the prophet, as the angel, as the candlestick of Eric Head. Operated for 33 and a half years, from 1970 to 33 to 2003. From this we see that the genuine revival and reformation starts at the head of the kingdom here on earth, the kingdom of heaven, or the kingdom of the Yahweh. That is set up here on this earth. That's where the revival and reformation started. And that kingdom is set up, and then after it's set up, it's sanctified and purified. It's not set up as a purified, glorified, heaven has the point of Pentecost. No, the kingdom of heaven is set up before any of that takes place in her. She's set up, and then there has to be a revival and reformation. Okay. And the former church that created the purified church, and that would be the Seventh-day Adventist church, is your former church that has created this last feeding pastor, Gilead Center, that pointed out the first fruits harvest of the 144,000 of the Adventist church. Brother Johnson was the only one of the prophets of Israel that pointed that out. And he pointed that out in 1970 to 2003, a 33 and a half year period, the same age of Yahshua when he was here on earth, from his birth to the cross was 33 and a half years. We're repeating that last 33 and a half years at the cross. We repeated that 33 and a half years from 1970 to 2003 in the Antichrist. Now that's pure new life, pure explained in a pure way. I've always known this, but I have never expressed it in that way before. From this we see that the genuine revival and the reformation in the kingdom of the heaven here on earth, in the house of the Yahweh, the mountain of the house of the Yahweh, Isaiah 2 and Micah 4. It starts with after the angel is spewed out, Revelation 3:17, after the angel of the candlestick of Laodicea is spewed out, then the new angel of the candlestick of the tenth candlestick of Zechariah 4. Go read Zechariah 4. This is the candlestick that succeeded the Laodicean candlestick, the number 7th church, Laodicea. Ezekiel chapter 4 candlestick, the 10th candlestick overall, is the one that succeeded the 7th candlestick at Gilead Center in 2003. From this we see that the genuine revival reformation starts at the head, not at the feet, and that the forerunner is given the right to put on the garment on his iniquity, for his iniquity is taken away, and he repents, and for he repents of his sin, and the Yahweh, the Father, blots them out at the atonement of that year that took place. For the Satan, though, is right there to resist and accuse him. But, thanks be, that verse should read as only thanks be unto the Yahweh the Father, that the Yahweh is also there. Let's change that. Thanks be to the Yahshua, the Son of the Yahweh, that he is also there for the rebuking of the enemy, Satan. Do you catch the lesson, brother, sister? While you are getting the garment, you will have to meet with the strong opposition. But what of it? Is it also too much to stand firmly for the truth and righteousness when the majority of the house of Israel forsakes the truth and righteousness of the Yahshua. And how else shall you become a Hebrew for the Yahweh the Father? Read Matthew 5:10-12. For the apostles and the prophets not only withstood the opposition from their own brethren, but they even gladly died for their white garment. You, though, are not now asked to give up your life, but to save it. For the tables are now reversed. For the Yahweh will not permit you to be consumed by the flame. He is to rescue you as a branch took out of the fire. From this we see that the Joshua of today is having his filthy garments of shame for the white robe, for the righteousness of the Yahshua. And I said, let them set a fair martyr upon his head. So they set a fair martyr, this is Zechariah 3:5, upon his head and clothed him with a garment of the righteousness, and the angel of the Yahshua stood by. Not only is he clothed in a white garment, also he is crowned with a fair martyr. And what could such a fair martyr denote other than the authority vested in him as the heaven's appointed ruler? And such he is told from his head to his feet, and the angel of the Yahshua stood by. What a gift and what a bodyguard for one to have in a world such as ours. And despite of it, though, human beings are very slow and hesitant for the taking of their stand on the Yahshua's Son of Yahweh's side, for most of them had rather lean on a man. That's what happened to Gilead's sinner. The whole congregation, including the wife of the angel of candle at the latest head, Brother Johnson, they all leaned on him exclusively, everyone. And all the new converts that came in leaned on him. But the new converts that came in over that 33 years that I was there, bringing them in and inviting them to come in, going out into the highways and the byways and inviting them to come in for 33 and a half years. But few we got to come in, they were driven back out by the wife of the angel of Laodicea, Brother Stephen Johnson, because she was unsanctified and unholy in every respect, unrighteous. Zechariah 3:8. Hear now, O Joshua, the high priest, thou and thy fellows have set before thee. But they are men wondered at. For behold, I will bring forth my servant to branch. For the Joshua, not only the Joshua, really also those who sit before him, and Luke Hall says, parentheses, the congregation, but there's only four men sitting before him, and they don't make up the whole congregation. So these were Joshua's helpers that would sit before him for Joshua the crown to be co-laborers with him. And that don't include the whole congregation, it's only isolated four. And admonished to hear his charge. And what kind of men are they? Men wonder that. But this symbolism shows that at the fulfillment of this prophecy, the angel of the congregation of the Latter Saints is no longer in the charge of the Yahweh's house. Now there it is right there. I want to reread that to you again. For this symbolism shows that at the fulfillment of this prophecy, the angel of the candlestick of the congregation of the Latter Saints, Brother Teddy Johnson, is no longer the angel in the charge of the Yahweh's house. So, and that the Yahweh's people are the most upholding have been wondered at. So when the angel of the candlestick of Laodicea still was screwed out, then that included all six churches before Laodicea. And what were the names of those six churches? I can't think of the first one now. Down there with the apostles. And then you had Smyrna, Martin Luther, the second church. And then you had Pergamos with Martin Luther, John Knox, Presbyterian, 1543. That was the third church. And then you had Thyatira with John Wesley. That was John Wesley, the Methodist Church, 1725. And then you had the fourth church. Which was the Baptist Church, or the fifth angel, which was of Alexander Campbell. Baptist Church, 1810. And then you had the fifth church, which was the sixth one. But anyway, it was William Miller in 1833, and then Ellen G. White in 1844, the latest thing. All right. So it says, this symbolism shows that at the fulfillment of this prophecy, the angel, Brother Thaddeus Johnson, of the congregation of the Gilead Center of Kermit, Texas, with the congregation of the Last Letter of Sin, that was made up, is no longer in the charge of the Yahweh's house, the everlasting. I say the Yahweh's house, which is mentioned there in Isaiah 2 and Micah 4. It's called the mountain of the house of the Yahweh here on earth. And that Yahweh's people are the made up holy of this purified church of the men wondered at. Obviously then, as a result of this revival and reformation within the Latter Saints congregation, another congregation emerges of which Joshua is in the charge, not the angel of the Latter Saints. In it, there are to be neither tares, Matthew 13:30, dead fish, Matthew 13:47, or ghosts, Matthew 25:32. For the Latter Saints, as the seventh, is the last that is commingled with the hypocrites, saints, and sinners. Who is to bring this revival and reformation, this great change, the branch, and according to Isaiah 11:1-5, the branch is the master, the son of the David, we shall now be. Zechariah 3:9. For behold, the stone that I have laid before Joshua upon the one stone shall be set in eye. Behold, I will engrave the graveyard there, saith Yahshua the host. and I will remove the iniquity of that land in one day. Those who set before the Joshua, those four men, the men wondered at, as such they are depicted by the stone, congregation or the kingdom. And that is not a true statement. It's hard. I'm having correct all these things. As soon as these are men wondered at, as soon as they are depicted by, as such they are depicted by the stone. No, they are not depicted by that stone hewn out and out of God's hand. A struck image on the feet and goes into a mountain and fills the whole earth. What Daniel chapter 2 verse 44 and 45 indicate. No, it's they are depicted by the stone. No, they are just, I don't know what they're really depicted by, but Joshua chapter 3 says they are Joshua's four helpers. And they don't say that those four helpers are depicted by anything. It just says they're his four helpers to do what Joshua's commanded to do, but he has to have helpers to help carry out the agenda. As such, they are described as the four helpers that helps Joshua carry out his commission as the angel of the 10th candlestick of Zechariah 4. That's new life. That is in the Joshua side, where it has seven eyes for every vision. When this, so that 10th candlestick has seven eyes for every vision. When this purification of the congregation takes place, then the sin in the land is quickly removed in one day. They're saying that the genuine revival and reformation are accompanied by the purification of the house of Israel. For the Yahweh is to have a pure congregation and a clean people. Zechariah 3:10. And that day, says Yeshua of the host, shall you call every man his neighbor under the vine and under the fig tree. And that day, and the day that this purification takes place, the teaching of the plan of salvation to the blood of the everlasting covenant, or the preaching of the faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, is a work that has to be quickly be finished by having every member of the Yahweh's house call his neighbor to his own patch of land, to that which the Yahweh has ordained that everyone should have. Every member, therefore, is to be a missionary in one capacity or in another. This indeed is a layman's movement that shall finish the gospel work. For the statement, call every man his neighbor under the vine and under the fig tree, appears also in the Mark of 4, for it teaches the same thing that the Zechariah teaches. For this subject, however, does not stop with the Zechariah 3. It continues on in the TG 1, page 225. Zechariah 6:11. And the crowns shall be under Helam and the Tobiah and Zedekiah, and to him the son of Zephaniah, for a memorial in the temple of the Yahweh. Verse 14 reveals that Joshua is to pass the crown on unto his helper from the Yahweh himself name. Let's do it again. In verse 14 it says, Zechariah 6, it says, reveals that Joshua is to pass the crown on to his helpers, or I'll say his four helpers, from the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, the high priest himself now. Thus, this is to be a memorial, an everlasting reminder in the temple of the Yahweh. And you see in Bitchy, he adds his own words, he says an everlasting reminder in the temple. But the Bible don't say that. It just says for this to be a memorial. I stand to be corrected if I'm wrong on this, and if I am, I stand to be corrected. But I don't believe it says an everlasting reminder. I don't remember reading that in the Bible. For this is to be a memorial in the temple of the Yahweh. What can all this mean? Just this. Joshua is a heaven's appointed judge ruler, for he himself is crowned as such. And in the response unto the Yahweh's own command, Yahshua, the son of Yahweh's own command, Joshua crowns his helpers from the Yahweh himself name. Okay, in the other words, as the members of the house of David, Joshua authorizes them to engage in the work. So that Joshua is responsible to the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, but his helpers are responsible unto Joshua, the son of Josedech, the one with the crown on, the first crown. Here is seen an organization having a leader and an under-leader, the master, and Joshua. Okay, now, it says here is seen an organization having a leadership, which, and an under-leader. Joshua, the son of Yahweh, is the top leader, and Joshua, the son of Josedech, is his under-leader. Thus it is that wherever is to be bound on the earth is also to be bound in heaven. Matthew 16:19. As concretely as heaven can make it, this symbolism depicts that Yahweh's people in this final work are not to labor at cross purposes. All are to speak the same thing. So it is that his watchmen shall lift up the voice with the voice together, shall they sing, for they shall see eye to eye when the Yahshua shall bring again his honor. Isaiah 52:8. Then his people shall be called the holy people, the redeemed of the Yahshua, sought out, a city not forsaken. Isaiah 6:12. And speak unto him, saying, thus speaketh the Yahshua of the host, saying, behold, a man whose name is the branch, and that's Yahshua. Yahshua, that's his name. And he shall go up out of his place, and he shall build a temple of the Yahweh the Father. So when you go to Amos chapter 9, you can read that where it says Yahshua, because he comes back to his kingdom here on earth, sit upon the throne of David, and raise up the tabernacle of David that is fallen down, and build the temple. It says Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, is going to do this. And that's what Zechariah 6:12 also says. For Joshua is well instructed that the burden and the ingenuity for the building of this spiritual temple belongs unto him whose name is the Grand, for he goes about his place. Unto him be the glory. He alone is to be exalted. He is to build the temple of the Yahweh. Zechariah 6:13-15. Even he shall build the temple of the Yahweh, and he shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne in the house of David. Luke 1:32-33, and Zechariah 9:68. For he shall be a priest upon his throne, and the council of the peace shall be between them both. I've got ahead of myself. This is Joshua, the son of Joseph, that is the one that's going to sit upon his throne. So then he also shall be a priest upon his throne. The council of the peace shall be between them both. Of who? Joshua, the son of Yahweh in heaven, is going to be have peace between him and Joshua, the son of Joseph, here on earth. And they that are called shall come and build in the temple of the Yahweh. No, they shall come and build in the temple of the Yahshua, son of Yahweh. And he shall know that the Yahweh, the Yahshua, the host, has sent me unto you. And this shall come to pass if you will diligently obey the voice of the Yahshua, your Redeemer, and Savior, your deliverer. Thus shall the prophecies of the Isaiah 2:4, also the chapters of Micah, be fulfilled. And that would be Micah 6. Finally, how do we know for certain that this message is planned and recorded especially for the congregation today? We know it from the fact that the relevance for the revelation of these scriptures is now never before unveiled and proclaimed. Now is proclamation makes known that the Yeshua is taking, the Son of Yahweh is taking the reins in his own hands. This morning's ministry is page 300, that the time of the purification of the congregation, the judgment of the living in the house of the Yahweh, 1 Peter 4:17, is at hand. Testimony, Volume 5, page 80, that the purified ones, 144,000, represented by the grain wheat, Revelation 14:1, are to be put into the barn of the everlasting kingdom of the David, Daniel 2:44-45, Matthew 13:30. No longer be a commingled with the tares, the sinners in Zion, which would be in the Adventist church, that an innumerable multitude from all the nations, Revelation 7:9, are to be brought into the house of the Yahweh, Isaiah 66:19-20. For you yourself can now answer the question as to whether you are a Davidian or still a Laodicean. If you are satisfied with yourself, with your spiritual attainment, with your man-made gospel program, if you think that the Yahweh is speaking unto you by whatever happens to prick in your mind, if you think you have all the truth and that you have neither the nothing, or if you think that everyone who does not have your stamp of the approval on his belief is a false prophet, and if you are in the constant fear that someone is everlastingly trying to deceive you because he teaches something new, if you never give it a thought that you may be slamming your own door against a truth bearer who may be bringing to you the Yahweh's eyesalve and the wedding garment, if you do all these, or any part of them, then you must be as good a little sin as you possibly be, not a divinity. But if you are aware that your garments are filthy and your iniquity not blotted out, if you realize that you are to walk in the Yahweh's way, as he directs through the Joshua of today, if you are all for the Yahweh and not at all for the self or for the world, then you either are or are beginning to be a division. If you have not attained unto all this, you should see that you do, and if you already have, then keep advancing in the light, and for certain you shall finally stand on the Mount Zion with the Lamb. Now take the counsel of the Yahweh, and no longer be a piece of bark drifting in the sea with every wind of doctrine, for the people of the Yahweh are represented in the message to the little sin as in a position of eternal security. They are at ease, believing themselves to be in an exalted condition of the spiritual attainment. What greater deception can come upon the human minds than a confidence that they are right when they are all wrong? For the message of the true witness finds the people of the Yahweh in a sad deception, yet honest in that deception. They know not that their condition is deplorable in the sight of the Yahweh, while those at rest are flattering themselves that they are in an exalted spiritual condition, for the message of the true witness breaks their security by the startling denunciation of their true condition of their spiritual blindness, poverty, and wretchedness. For the testimony so cutting and severe cannot be a mistake, for it is a true witness, Joshua, Revelation chapter 1, verse 5. Who speaks, and his testimony must be correct. Testimony for the Church, Volume 3, 252. We have no right to judge a man until he's fairly tried, but we like not like his companion. We know the world is wise. Some may have faults, and who has not? The old as well as young, perhaps we may, for aught we know, at 52 there one, Joseph Cromwell, trust and obey. That's the ending of our sermon with the song, Trust and Obey. When we walk with the Yahweh in the light of His Word, what a glory He sheds on our way. While we do His good will, He abides with us still, and with all who will trust and obey. Not a burden we bear, not a sorrow we share, but a toy that quickly repay, not a grief nor a loss, not a frown nor a cross, but a bliss if we trust and obey. But we never can prove the delights of His love until all on the altar we lay, for the favor He shows and the joy He bestows for them who will trust and obey. This, friends, is the end of our study. This is our contact at the 11th hour corner, number 11, click on our audio archive.